Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Christopher Mitchell, the Director of Telecommunications as Commons Initiative at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. He's a leading national expert on community broadband networks, and he runs muninetworks.org, the comprehensive online clearinghouse for information about community broadband. Welcome to Background Briefing, Christopher Mitchell.
Thank you for having me.
And Christopher, you're mentioned in an op-ed in Monday's New York Times by Susan Crawford, who was the – a lot of people thought that she might become the chairman of the FCC. She was often referred to as the Elizabeth Warren of the telecommunications world, but instead President Obama appointed a former lobbyist for the cable companies, Tom Wheeler, and he has really gotten people alarmed about indications that net neutrality is basically going to be destroyed. And even though he said the press reports in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal got it dead wrong, nobody seems to be assured in any way that indeed Wheeler and the FCC are going to proceed to basically hand over the internet to these huge monopolies. Is that your understanding?
Well, I think there's a lot of rhetoric because this is an incredibly important issue. I don't think that we're about to see network neutrality destroyed, but I do fear that we're going to see the beginning of an erosive process that will end up with much less network neutrality, which is to say more toll booths where Comcast and the big cable companies can try and force us to pay more to do a lot of the same things we've been doing.
So, but the point, of course, of the reason I'm talking to you, Christopher Mitchell, is that Susan Crawford is saying there's an easy end run around this, and that is, you know, let these dinosaurs have their way. They own government, et cetera. And, you know, she wrote, I think, an extremely important book, which was called Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and the Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. So taking that premise that we live in a new Gilded Age and this is a new monopoly, that there's a way around the destruction of net neutrality through municipal broadband. So let's talk about that, because that's your specialty and that's our hope, frankly.
Absolutely. The nice thing about municipal broadband or community networks more generally is that it's something local governments can do even if Washington falls down on the job. I would never suggest that they're either-or options. Frankly, we should be pursuing both, where we should have good regulations at the federal level that apply to the networks that everyone uses. And at the local level, communities should be free to build networks if they want to that offer a higher level of service, not just faster speeds, but also often lower prices, better customer service, and some of the other benefits like keeping money in the community. So rather than writing a check to Comcast, you're writing it out to a local entity that's more likely to keep that money in the community and put more money in your neighbor's pockets ultimately.
But wasn't that the intention of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, that municipalities could build a broadband and the act prohibits states from putting up unreasonable obstacles, which of course has exactly what the big telecom monopolies have done. Verizon and Comcast have been suing municipalities and states to preemptively block any chance at building municipal broadband networks.
That's right. The big cable and the telephone companies, they've really worked hard to make sure that communities didn't have this choice. 19 states now block municipal networks, and California actually is sort of in a middle ground. It's the 20th one sometimes cited because public service districts are not permitted to build networks in rural areas, except for under these stringent conditions. But to answer your question, yes, the 1996 Telecom Act, as framed by the people who wrote it and passed it, did intend to make sure that municipalities could build these networks. However, when it was interpreted later by the courts, and particularly in 2004 by the Supreme Court, in a case in Nixon v. Missouri, what happened was that the big cable companies won again. And they decided, the Supreme Court decided, that it was not clear enough that the federal government intended to take away states' rights to limit local government rights, which is a really complicated legal doctrine, but ultimately it ends up with a situation where cable companies can lobby state legislatures, throw all kinds of money at them and lies and misinformation, and walk away with legislation that all but prohibits, and in some cases even does prohibit, municipal networks from being built.
But isn't it also true, though, from that Supreme Court decision that the FCC could, if it wanted to, block those laws at the federal level?
Well, this is where it gets even more complicated, in that in the most recent decision, the Circuit Court of Washington, D.C., it ruled that the FCC has this power, which you may hear called the Section 706 power from the Telecommunications Act. And basically, if the FCC finds that advanced broadband services are being deployed in too slow of a time period, it has new powers it can use. One of those powers is the ability to get rid of barriers to investment. And the court very clearly told the FCC just 2 months ago that these powers included the ability to remove state restrictions on municipal networks. That was something that previously the FCC, which tends to be a fairly conservative organization in terms of how it interprets its own powers, it previously was not sure its powers reached that far. And so this was a clear sign to them that their powers did reach that far, and it was coming from a fairly conservative set of judges. So they have a pretty good sense that they have this power and that it will be upheld when it's inevitably challenged by those same big telecommunications companies. And so what we've seen recently is that the FCC and Chairman Wheeler in particular have spoken about examining this power and trying to figure out the best ways of removing some of these barriers to municipal networks.
And again, I'm speaking with Christopher Mitchell, who's the Director of Telecommunications as Commons Initiative at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. He's a leading national expert on community broadband networks, and he runs muninetworks.org, the comprehensive online clearinghouse for information about community broadband. So the good news here, and we're talking about an alternative to the end of net neutrality, which we may be declaring it dead prematurely, but it's certainly got a lot of people alarmed based upon leaks in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal that the new head of the FCC have said the reports are dead wrong, but everybody seems to think that they may unfortunately be right. But the good news here is that your organization apparently have counted 400 towns and cities across America that have installed or are planning to install high-speed broadband networks? That's extraordinary.
Yes, absolutely. It's actually over 400 that have already done it. It's about 150 where the network already reaches citywide. Some of those were already cable networks that were built maybe more than 10, 15 years ago. And then there's about 75, 80 where they're all fiber networks. And these are much more recent next-generation networks. So that's about 150 of these networks go citywide, and then there's over 250 where there's some level of service available in parts of the community. And so one of those examples actually, or a couple of them in California, involve Burbank, Santa Monica, Long Beach, I believe. These are networks that are available to people in certain areas of town, often businesses, and are available to be extended if the people within those communities would like to. They're networks that are owned by, in many cases, a municipal utility, or in the case of Santa Monica, the city itself. And so they are available to be expanded, but in many cases are pretty limited because I think local leaders aren't always sure that the citizens want to see the network expanded to serve everyone.
Well, but in the case of Santa Monica, it's called CityNet, and it's largely available to businesses. And it's a huge magnet to attracting business to Santa Monica, because we are deprived of the very thing that was invented here in the United States, high-speed broadband and fiber optics. As you point out, they've been laid all over the place. But the last mile's controlled, the pipes into people's homes are controlled by these monopolies who don't seem to care. They just want to extract as much money they can out of customers for as little service that they are required to provide. And you have this extraordinary alternative. So it's like a light bulb goes off. The minute you get high-speed broadband, you wonder what planet you've been on. I mean, the Japanese, the South Koreans, it's ubiquitous there. So it's little wonder that when people have access to it, it's incredibly increases productivity and business profits, etc. That's why it's a magnet. I don't understand why there'd be any ambivalence about wanting high-speed broadband, you know, if whether you're on the left or the right.
Well, it's not a partisan issue on the local level, where people of all stripes agree that communities should be the ones to make the decision. And in fact, many of the communities, more than half of the communities that have built these networks, vote Republican. And so we don't see any sort of bias. But at the state and the federal level, it's often Republicans who are leading the charge with big money from the big cable and telephone companies to limit local authority to choose. One of the reasons, though, that people choose not to in some communities is because it's a very difficult business to be in. Right now, Comcast is charging people a whole heck of a lot for money. If the city builds a network, then Comcast will suddenly cut its prices down much lower. And a lot of people have short memories, and they'll forget that they wanted the city to build a network. And then they will decide to pick Comcast, and they'll continue taking service from Comcast at lower prices. And that means that the new network, whether it's owned by the city in this case or even a private company, may not have enough subscribers to make its business model work. And at that point, it may go bankrupt, or the city may decide to sell it or have to subsidize it with funds from taxes or some other form. Now, that's quite rare that that's happened, but that's a threat. And that's the reality, which is that people really want a better option. But as soon as Comcast starts lowering prices, people forget. They stay with Comcast. Comcast runs any competition out of the market, and then it raises its prices back up again. And so to some extent, we need to make sure that we're supporting local businesses, and that if we encourage our communities to build these networks, that we stick with it, even if Comcast temporarily lowers its prices.
But apparently in the city of Chattanooga, where they have high-speed broadband, fiber optics are laid, and this is a city municipality. No matter what competition thrown at them, they can jack up the speed to, you know, amazing amounts of bandwidth. Verizon put down Fios, but they Wall Street pushed out the CEO because he was spending too much money and they weren't having quick returns. And, of course, that's turned out to be an incredibly valuable profit center for Verizon. But what I understand that the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, have is even better than any other commercial competitor is offering.
That perfectly illustrates the difference between community networks and the private sector networks. It's not just about the technology. The fiber makes a big difference, but the fact that Chattanooga is a city utility, and a particularly very well-run city utility at that, they have made a choice to offer the fastest speeds available in the country, to keep rates affordable, and to offer great customer service. Verizon built a fiber network that's quite similar technically in terms of the fiber and the technologies that are being used, but they offer higher prices, their customer service isn't nearly as good. And so there we see one of the main differences between these networks. But you're right, Chattanooga launched, I want to say, 4.5 years ago. I've been able to visit them twice, and I wrote a big case study about them called Broadband at the Speed of Light. They started by offering 15 megabit symmetrical connections, which means you get the same speeds upload as download, which is different from a cable system where often you get much slower uploads than downloads. So they started off with symmetrical 15 megabits. They went to 30, doubling it. Next year, they went up to 50 megabits. And then just last year, they went to 100. They've increased the speeds 4 times, once each year, without ever raising the prices. Now, I can't remember the last time I went more than 12 months without Comcast raising my prices. So you really do get a sense of the possibility of these. But Chattanooga just has this incredibly well-run municipal utility that has a real community spirit. You don't always see that. And in fact, you see Los Angeles in many ways not even really considering using its municipal utility in a similar fashion, which I think is too bad.
But the kind of service that you get in Chattanooga from the municipality, from this high-speed broadband, which, as you just pointed out, is extraordinary speed, Isn't that exactly what the Netflixes and the Amazons and these other companies want? And what's going on now with the FCC in terms of allowing, apparently they're about to allow the Comcasts of this world to basically, force Netflix into a kind of payola scheme where you got to pay more and we'll speed up your service. But here's the alternative in Chattanooga, and it's available, and you say that 400 municipalities are working on, the same municipal broadband. This is, I think, this is really where the rubber meets the road, isn't it? The choice is between a kind of corporate monopoly extorting payola out of content deliverers and a municipality that's just open for all, and it's got a better, higher speed than anybody else.
That's right. I can't tell you the number of times I've spoken with small businesses around the United States that are served by municipal networks, and they talk about how previously there was some giant faceless corporation, and they would have to wait days and sometimes even weeks in rural areas for repairs to be made, whereas the municipal network serves people and gets them fixed up right away if something goes wrong. It's a totally different mindset. And, I don't want to say that municipal networks are the alternative to doing the right thing at the federal level, because it's important that at the federal level we maintain the freedom at the local level to make these choices. If we say that municipal networks are the solution we should focus on and we should ignore stopping the Comcast-Time Warner Cable merger, for instance, that ignores the fact that if Comcast is allowed to become so much larger and more powerful, it will be harder for local governments to build networks. And similarly, even though Comcast violating network neutrality makes it more clear how much better municipal networks are because they don't have that same incentive to just maximize all the profits, the reality is that most people should have a network that is not screwing them that significantly. And so we need to maintain a look at both the federal level and making sure that we have good common sense regulations. But the local level is where we can really act, and we can make sure that even if we don't succeed at the federal level, we have networks that are going to meet our needs. You had asked about the big companies like Netflix and Amazon and the others. And Netflix, to its credit, has been really good on public policy, trying to encourage good policies that will benefit everyone. But I think when you look at Amazon and some of these other companies, they're going to be able to pay the toll. And so they may not like paying tolls to Comcast, but they know that they're going to always be in a better position than any startup rivals. And so in some ways, tolls could help some of these more established business and really hurt innovation. And that's a real threat, I think, to all of us.
Well, Christopher Mitchell, I thank you very much for joining us. And I think your admonition that not exactly what you said, but what you're implying here is that people should hold the FCC's feet to the fire, and particularly Chairman Tom Wheeler's, and not to sell us out on net neutrality. So these aren't mutually exclusive, are they?
That's right. We need to do both.
Well, I thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I'm speaking with Christopher Mitchell, who is the director of Telecommunications as Commons Initiative at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. He's a leading national expert on community broadband networks, and he runs muninetworks.org, the comprehensive online clearinghouse of information about community broadband. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.